Welcome to the RSP Cast. I'm Matt Walden with Rookie Scouting Portfolio. We're going to take a look at eight notable landing spots for players in this 2020 NFL draft class. So we're going to talk about guys who I think, you know, either positive or negative, and really kind of in an under the radar sort of way. I'm going to talk about notable skills or lack of skills that may, or just something about the situation that they've landed in, that make these players folks that you shouldn't sleep on, either in a good or bad way. Okay. Before we do that, the Rookie Scouting Portfolio post-draft is available now, and it's available for download at mattwaldman.com. Remember that when you get the post-draft, you're also paying for the pre-draft, which is an excellent long-term document, and you get the newsletter that comes out from June through December. This coming June, I'll be doing my update, once again, of the past three rookie classes and giving you a three-year ranking of that, those past three rookie classes. That's going to be great for dynasty leagues and some redraft situations coming up. And with this particular post-draft, again, you get a cheat sheet that has well over 150 players that are ranked. And you also get to see my ranking versus the ADP of 15 leagues that I studied. You can get to see the ADP data that I collected, links to the team, to the leagues where I collected it, so that you can fill in the rest. If, for instance, you want to see, you know, who was the 45th pick in some of these classes, so you can kind of keep track of that yourself. And then it also shows you good fit, bad fit, depth chart analysis with the existing players on those teams and on those depth charts, and what their contract situations are, where it's notable. So really terrific document for fantasy players. Again, for $19.95 at mattwaldman.com. And if you notice, you look at my website, you look at my YouTube channel, even the publications that I put out, I don't run ads. I could run ads, but I don't do that right now. I'd rather you be able to just invest in one thing. And if you invest in that one thing, you get the kind of content you get on this RSP Cast, on the YouTube channel, on Twitter, and with the publication and site. So thank you for considering that. So let's get on to some of these players here. Okay. Who's the first player that I think is notable? And I think it's extremely notable, and it's the fit with J.K. Dobbins to the Baltimore Ravens. And Eric DaCosta, the Ravens GM, said that Dobbins was far and away the top player on their board. Far and away. Now, you know, a lot of people are going to listen to him and say, well, he's not that much better than Jonathan Taylor. He might not even be better than Jonathan Taylor. Or what about Clyde Edwards-Helaire or DeAndre Swift? Scouting is about player fit. That's the thing that people always forget about when they're just thinking from a fantasy point of view, you know, about who's the best or most talented player, or that you're not scouting for the entire league. Because analysts like myself or Dane Brugler, or whether it's Mel Kiper or Todd McShay or Lance Zierlein, we're scouting for the entire league. We're trying to account for the widest array of potential outcomes and then giving you some specific ideas about where they'd fit best. But we're not ranking them based on how the Baltimore Ravens would rank them, based on their offense and what they do well. So let's think about this a little bit. The reason that Dobbins probably was far and away the highest ranked player on their board is based on what he does well and what he does better than Jonathan Taylor and Clyde Edwards-Helaire is that his skills are more integrated than those two guys. Okay. Edwards-Helaire has terrific vision. He has great, elusiveness. He can catch the ball well. He runs routes excellently. So he's a great fit for what the Chiefs want to do in terms of being able to split him outside, have him run from the slot or work from the backfield to an outside position pre-snap, allow them to be able to gain more matchup advantages for other players or for Edwards-Helaire based on what the defense is doing, and get him in space where he can break a tackle or make the first man miss. And he's competent enough in a spread system where he's going to be able to make really strong decisions and get into the secondary or get into the second level at least as a runner. And he works well in tight boxes too. So if they condense the field, he can do that. Now, he's not an ultra-powerful player. He's also not a breakaway player, not a guy who's going to turn, you know, plays that get into the linebacker range into plays where he outruns secondary defenders and winds up on with 50, 60, 70-yard gains as often as you'd see with a guy like Jonathan Taylor or with J.K. Dobbins. You know, with Taylor and Dobbins, these are guys who have a little more power than Edwards-Helaire. You know, they can break tackles at the line of scrimmage. Dobbins, like Edwards-Helaire, is very good at being able to sift through traffic. I'd say he's even a little better at sifting through tight rushing lanes. And he can get lost in them because he does have a low center of gravity like Edwards-Helaire, but he has a little more balance, a little bit more power. And then in addition to that, he has a lot more speed. This is a guy that when he bounces a play outside, he can defeat defender angles that a lot of backs cannot. That's why I've compared him to Ray Rice with speed. And the Baltimore Ravens obviously know in Ray Rice's game very well. And they can get a guy with breakaway speed with Dobbins in that offense. Think about this offense for a minute. If you get breakaway speed with a back who also has that between the tackles mentality and patience, footwork, and he can get lost in there, think about Lamar Jackson on those zone reads, on those read option plays, where in the first place, just with Jackson alone, he forces opposing defenses to play 11-on-11 football. You know, with most quarterbacks, say Tom Brady, no one's going to be guarding Tom Brady seriously if he runs a read option play in most circumstances or any type of zone read. They're going to be taking their 11 men and focusing on 10 of the offensive players. With Lamar Jackson, you have to have a defender focused solely on Jackson, which means that it evens the playing field. That's at least because Jackson is such a threat that he also forces those 11 defenders, many of them, to overreact to what he's doing. So as a result, not only do you get 11-on-11 football, you wind up where you actually have 11 offensive players and maybe three or as many as four defenders reacting to what Jackson does. And that can create a 1, 2, or 3 offensive to defensive player advantage for the players with the ball. And that means that Dobbins now is running against even lighter box looks to one side of the field. And if he makes the first man miss or the second man miss, or is patient enough between the slower developing or even quick hitting plays to kind of hide behind the blockers with his low center of gravity and then squirt through and get in the open field with his speed and burst, he's going to break a lot of long gains. Mark Ingram is a terrific back. And the reason the Ravens wanted him is that he could be rugged between the tackles, but he could also, he's very shifty and patient. And he's someone with that low center of gravity who can get into the secondary. He often did that. But Dobbins has that finishing speed, that game-breaking speed that Ingram lacks. So where Ingram's going to get you 20, 30, 40-yard gains on occasion, Dobbins may end up giving you more 50, 60, 70-yard gains, big back-breaking plays, in addition to, you know, 20, 30, and 40-yarders as well. And in addition to Dobbins has promising pass protection skills and good ball security. So when you put all that together, you know, that anybody, any defense that's dealing with the Ravens' rushing game is going to have to deal with the fact that they might not be able to find Dobbins as easily as Mark Ingram because of how short he is. They're going to have issues being able to catch him at certain angles that they can catch other backs. And now you have two players that you have to account for in the running game who can break huge plays. And that's going to force the defense to marshal more of its forces against the run. That's going to create even more one-on-ones in the passing game. That's going to help, you know, Lamar Jackson hit players like Marquise Brown and Devin Duvernay, Miles Boykin, and Willie Snead, and, you know, eventually James Prochet as an example. But this is going to be a really dangerous thing. And whereas Jonathan Taylor's more of a power back with speed, you know, Dobbins being kind of that scat back with enough power to work between the tackles more so than Edwards-Helaire. And in these compressed situations where you need a back who can really make efficient moves and work through trash well, Dobbins is far and away the best pick for the Baltimore Ravens. So I think you should keep an eye on him. He's my number one back on the board and my number one player on my post-draft cheat sheet as a result of its fit. And while Edwards-Helaire seems like the more stunning example for a lot of people, you have to remember that, you know, his pass protection has to get better. His power running isn't great and probably will never get better in terms of working in the box against the first, you know, 7 to 8 to 9 men within the 5 yards of the line of scrimmage. He's not going to be as good as Dobbins in that regard. So there's a greater chance that Edwards-Helaire is in a committee for a longer term than Dobbins will be. I think to start the year, Dobbins, Taylor, and Helaire will all wind up in a committee situation, but all three of them also are in situations where long term they will be the guy. And, you know, Mark Ingram is 30, turning 30. He has 2 years left on his deal, but this year kind of has an out after 2020. But, you know, Ingram is also used to working in situations with another star back. He's used to taking a back seat. He doesn't want to, obviously. He's a competitor. But turning 30 and being in the league as long as he has, I think he understands that he also wants to win a championship and be part of the team. And I can totally see him giving way to Dobbins by midseason or late season, and by especially by early next year, that he could be one heck of a backup. Maybe they'll renegotiate his contract, and he'll realize that it's worth it to him to be the backup and to be a worthwhile contributor to this team if they need him for more, that he can deliver more. But he can be a part of a team that's going to be in a championship window for the next 2 to 3 years. You know, whereas we look at Helaire, maybe he's a little bit more, you know, he's compared to Brian Westbrook by Andy Reid, and he would know. And when you look at Westbrook, he had 2 really strong years, really strong fantasy years. Top 5, top 10, top 5 caliber years. Only 2 out of, I think, a 10, 12, 13 year career. And for the first 5 years, I believe, first 4 to 5, Westbrook was in a committee. And Andy Reid likes committees. Now, he will roll with one stud back when he can get it. We've seen it in the past with him, LeSean McCoy. We've seen it with Spencer Ware for a short period when Ware was really dominating as a yards after catch guy and a yards after contact guy. And he pushed his way out of a committee role and was really able to perform well. So there's some of that. And then you have to consider that, you know, Darrell Williams, what he can do as a powerful player, Damian Williams' ability in the red zone in terms of the passing game and getting, you know, being able to be in sync with Mahomes. I think Edwards-Helaire will get there, but I wouldn't necessarily say this is a, you just kind of rubber stamp this thing and say Edwards-Helaire is by far the top option in this class among the running backs. I think all three will probably have some committee share. And Dobbins to me and Taylor to me long-term have the brightest circumstances because I think they have the build and the ability to be the lead, not only the lead back, but maybe even the featured back. So let's talk about another running back in this class who I think had a notable landing spot. And that's DeAndre Swift. And I have Swift lower on my board than most people. It's not because of his talent. I think he's a very talented back. Catches the ball really well. You know, his ability to adjust after his first route doesn't break open. Excellent at that. Maybe better than Helaire in that regard. He has good balance. He has excellent footwork in terms of being able to move and make the first man miss. He's someone that I think has good vision that can get a little better. And he has moments of having great vision, but he has to continue to refine his game there. His power is okay. Now he's more scat back in power, but I think that there are moments in terms of him heading downhill where his contact balance is stronger than maybe his overall power is. But he can drag a defender. He's someone that can break arm tackles. He's also a guy that can bounce off certain types of hits coming from angles that would give you the idea that he's a bigger back and a smaller body. But he's not a top guy in terms of power and contact balance. I'd say he's at starter level, but he's not a star in that regard. You know, a lot of teams are looking for stars when they have starters. So when you look at Swift and his game, Now you pair him with Kerryon Johnson in Detroit. I think it's notable that we don't just assume that Swift is there to replace Kerryon Johnson. You know, yes, Kerryon Johnson's contract ends, you know, at the end of the year. They probably won't, or I think at the end of next year, and they probably won't be renewing that deal. You know, I could see where they don't renew that at all. But I think that Johnson, you know, they may have drafted Swift because Johnson has missed, I think he's played 18 games in the first 2 years right now. So he's missed a fair bit of time, you know, or he's missed 18 games. I'm trying to remember. I think he missed 18 games. I have to, you know, I haven't really looked again at that, but he's missed a significant amount of time. That's the point. And because he's missed a significant amount of time each of the past 2 years, I think Matt Patricia and company and Bob Quinn probably don't trust Kerryon Johnson to stay healthy. And they may look also at the influence of, you know, Patricia looking to the influence of Bill Belichick in New England and think, let's get a committee. Let's get a committee of guys where we have a golf club in the, you know, a different golf club for the, in the bag for each moment. And, you know, Swift will be our future Johnson type of back. We can use Bo Scarborough on the cheap as a physical player. We've got this Jason Huntley kid who we think's really Swift. You know, he's really quick and fast and maybe can have a role as well. And they feel like that they can use three backs in that way. And then maybe just split Swift and Johnson for this year and maybe next in a way where they can split carries that maybe normally one of them would only get. So this could, I think this is going to be a full-blown committee because if you ask me from a talent perspective, as good as Swift is, I don't think he's as talented as Kerryon Johnson. Now, it's not notable on a level where, you know, the average fans can look at this and say, oh, yeah, Swift's way better than Johnson. You know, I mean, you'll get people saying that. But I think if you look at their skills, Johnson has good contact balance, good power, excellent speed and swiftness. He's a terrific runner in terms of his vision. I think he has better vision than Swift. I think he's got a little better contact balance than Swift. Certainly has the game-breaking speed that I think Swift is timed well, but maybe not. It takes him a little longer to get up to that speed than Johnson does, and Johnson's an excellent receiver. So if Johnson stays healthy, there's a very strong possibility that Swift just has, you know, a contributing role this year. But we know that Johnson hasn't been able to do that, so Swift is a guy that gives you a little more boom bust potential outcomes this year and next because of the presence of an ultra talented running back and Kerryon Johnson, which is why he's a little lower on my board and something that I think folks need to pay attention to. Now, long term, I like Swift's potential. And even this year, you can see he's a worker. He's a really hard worker. And when you have guys who work at their game at the small points, the fine details, that often shines through over the course of time. And so, whereas Johnson hasn't been on the field enough and to really inspire the confidence that the team wants to have in him as a long-term option, and that's why I think they drafted Swift. Swift is the type of guy that I think, while not as good as Johnson right now, has the mentality to get better and better and better at his trade. He's not going to get that much faster, that much quicker, but he's going to get mentally quicker, and that's going to show up on the field in terms of reaction time. He's going to become savvier at how to set up blocks because he's going to study that. He's going to get better at, you know, pass protection and really be an asset and be able to read more complex schemes. You know, he's a worker. And those are guys that end up making the plays down in and down out like a young Frank Gore in a sense. He's not physically like Frank Gore. He's a little bit more, he's a little bit more athletic than what Gore was post two knee surgeries, you know, that he had in Miami. But he's a guy that can be a worker like Gore was. And we saw how long and how productive Gore has been over the course of his career as a result of having that work ethic in common. So that's a notable thing about Swift, but it's still a boom bust situation. Speaking of guys who are kind of in boom bust situations, let's look at another Georgia player, and that's Jake Fromm out of with Buffalo. You know, because Josh Allen is such a polarizing player to a lot of fans, they're already talking about Jake Fromm in some regards as the possibility to take over for Josh Allen. I don't think that's realistic right now. And certainly the, you know, the GM, Buffalo Bills GM, Billy Beane, I think put that to rest pretty early in his post-draft press conferences on Fromm. They didn't even expect to draft Fromm. They just thought he was too good of a deal. Now that tells you two things, you know, either he's being completely accurate and they were just staying true to their board and they saw him being, from a value perspective, maybe a third or fourth round pick, and they decided that they could get him late enough that why not take the best player on the board? We have that luxury. Or it's a situation where they're, what they're not saying is, we don't want to put pressure on Josh Allen, but at the same time, we want to have a player who's maybe, you know, who has the value to become ready and to be a starter long term for us if it fits right. So it's one of those situations. It's one of those situations where, you know, he can become a, you know, he can become a starter in this league, and where that may happen, where that may happen is if he's able to develop the arm talent to play in Buffalo. And that's the big if with his game. And that's the detail that we're going to have to watch for. Now, I've detailed in past podcasts and in my writing that Fromm has the requisite velocity to be an NFL quarterback, and that it can get better. And that some of that was hidden by scheme with Georgia, with the mismanagement of his drops, that the way that they paired drops with certain routes that made his arm look worse. Part of it, too, is I heard the question marks that I think Trey Wingo asked, you know, Daniel Jeremiah and, you know, Lewis Riddick about, do you think that, you know, that when you watch Jake Fromm against Jacob Eason or Justin Herbert at the combine, and you see the difference in arm strength, that you may let your bias get in terms of how to really rate that arm strength? And, you know, Daniel Jeremiah, you know, respect his work. He's great. You know, he mentioned that, no, I don't think I really see that much of a difference. You know, when you like, you're not going to have a bias against Fromm because you're seeing each of these guys one at a time. You're just seeing the result. And there's some truth to that. That can be true. But it can also be true, as Lewis Riddick said, that you are going to see those differences, you know, on a level where it could maybe hurt you a little bit. And I think that you have to be, when it comes to self-scouting, you have to be accountable to the possibility that you overreact to a player who has less arm strength than guys who have huge guns. And you may overreact on the negative with it. Now, we're going to find out, you know, because it's an interesting question. I'm not saying one's right or one's wrong. I'm just saying that both scenarios can happen. We have to determine whether and what way that really is the truth for Fromm. And I think Fromm does have to develop his arm more. And I think that this is actually, in a way, you know, this is a make or break landing spot for Fromm. Like, if he ended up in New Orleans and was in the Superdome and sitting behind Drew Brees, and we had two or three years of Brees left, and Fromm comes in, they might have assumed he's going to be the starter because they've seen enough from his arm and the environments and the passing game that they have that he might be able to do it. And then they find out later that he doesn't really do it as well on some of the throws they'd like to see from him. And they've committed that amount of time to him. And now they have to go back and start over with another quarterback. And that can be a difficult situation for a team. But they gave him more of a chance than maybe he'll get in Buffalo. Because in Buffalo, you know he's going to have to show the arm strength. He's going to have to be able to deliver the velocity throws at least enough in those conditions to be able to do the job well in that environment differently than what you would get in New Orleans. So with Fromm, you need to be in a, you look at him, and in that situation, he's going to have to get better right away. So if he shows signs of success with arm velocity within the next year, maybe they're patient enough for a year and a half. If he does that, we may see Jake Fromm compete for the starting job if Josh Allen doesn't continue to get better and better. And I think Allen has shown improvement So I think that the whole Billy Beane, let's put this to sleep type of thing and say Fromm isn't competing for a starting job. He might be able to beat out Matt Barkley. Let's see. I think is the correct perspective to have and position to take as a GM. But you also have to understand too that if Fromm makes that next step, now they have a quarterback who has certain skills that Josh Allen has struggled with and may always struggle with. And at that point, then we can take that next step. So if you're a fantasy player and you're thinking about Jake Fromm, I think he's the type of guy that you're probably going to be able to, in a deeper league, you probably want to add him and put him on the practice squad and see how that goes this year. And if he shows signs of arm strength and people are impressed with that, then you can move forward and be able to, feel good about keeping him on your roster. But if you're in a shallower league, you can probably wait a bit. And he can be a guy that you can just monitor and see how his development goes. And if you see signs of, positive play, whether it's in the preseason or at the end of the year, if, say, the Bills are out of it, or if they're in playoff contention and now they've earned a spot and they have a bye and Fromm can get on the field, you might be able to see enough of him to go as a guy I need to add now. So far we've talked about Dobbins, a little bit about Hilaire and Taylor. Swift is really our second guy. Dobbins, our third guy. Let's talk about our fourth guy on this list, okay? And that's Antonio Gandy-Golden. The thing that you want to watch for with Gandy-Golden, wide receiver with Washington, is whether or not playing at Liberty, kind of retarded his ability to develop or slowed his ability to become the top athlete that he's capable of being. Because he's already a terrific athlete. But, oftentimes when you think about speed, quickness, the timed events at the combine, when you play at a smaller program, you may not be in a training program that's top notch, like some of these Power Five schools, where, I've heard scouts say that a player like Andy Golden, if he played at Ohio State, if he played at Georgia, if he played at LSU, that he would be the type that he would have developed the kind of athletic ability in terms of testing speed, time speed, that would put him at a higher round than where he was. But I thought he was drafted pretty early considering what his timed outcomes were in workouts. So that tells me that teams liked what the Washington liked what they saw. They liked his power. They liked the fact that it's hard to knock him off of his line as a receiver. He stays in a straight line with his path where if the defender's trying to get physical with him, he's not going to get ridden to the sideline as much. He's not going to get pushed inside or off path. He's going to be able to withstand that contact. So he may only run, a smaller number of routes than a guy like, say, Van Jefferson as an example, who runs a ton of different routes. But Gandy Golden's the type of guy that when he gets pressed, he's going to be able to still get open on the routes that he runs. So what would you rather have? Would you rather have a guy with a bunch of fancy moves and different techniques and eight different ways to do something, but maybe only three of them will work against a patient tight coverage corner who's physical? Or would you rather have a guy who does two to three things really well, and even if that patient tight coverage corner is on him, he's still going to win more often than the guy who has all those tools in his tool bag? I think you know the answer to that. And I think Washington knew the answer to that. And I think that if Gandy Golden can show even more speed and more burst, if he's improved in that level over the next year or two, he could wind up maybe being a star in this league. And he's shown just some of the off-field interviews you're seeing about him, some of the features on him. You're seeing a guy who is very good at being able to learn fast. So get him in an NFL locker room, get him in a training facility, give him the chance to have the money to hire somebody so that he can work with in terms of a trainer. And I think we may end up seeing a guy who far outplays his draft position. So that's what you want to keep an eye on is anybody reporting that he's become an even better athlete? Because if that happens, look out. Now, the next player we're going to look at, Jeff Thomas, wide receiver for New England. He's out of the University of Miami. A lot of people like KJ Hamler. And I understand that. I mean, as a in a vacuum, KJ Hamler is an exciting player. There's a little Tyler Lockett to him in terms of being able to cut off defenders at the catch point on deeper routes, and he tracks the ball well. Terrific return specialist and open field player, and shows some toughness in the middle of the field. Okay. I don't think he's like Lockett in terms of taking the ball away from defenders against physical tight coverage the way that Lockett can do some of that. But Hamler is certainly an exciting game-breaking option. But I think Jeff Thomas can do all of that. I've seen him do all of it. I think he's almost as good in the open field as Hamler, may even have better specific forms of footwork to make the first man miss. And so he can play in the return game. He can play in the slot. He can be an open field guy, but he can also play on the perimeter. He's a good outside receiver. So when you look at it from that standpoint, he may offer a little bit more. He might be what New England wanted Philip Dorsett to become and never really did. And the question mark for Thomas is whether or not he can be the professional in terms of mindset and maturity that New England's looking for from their football players. Because if he can study, be on top of things consistently, continually improve, work well with his quarterback, not make mental errors, and be a good citizen. And I don't think he was a bad citizen necessarily at Miami. I don't know what his issue was. I just know that he's been suspended a couple of times for violating team rules. And he and Mark Richt kind of were on the outs, and he was going to transfer to Illinois. And then when Mark Richt got fired, Manny Diaz came in, and they wooed Thomas back. And then Thomas got suspended again under Diaz. So, you know, this is a guy who obviously needs to learn how to, you know, work within the structure of what the team expects from him. And I think he's like Fromm in a sink or swim situation, but again, really good boom bust upside here. If you see him catch on, you hear that he's been doing well, that he's been mature, that he's been conscientious and studious, and he's performing well, he could be the best wide receiver on that team when Julian Edelman goes, you know, and moves on. And he could end up being a really nice option for them, someone who may give you a little bit more inside and outside than what KJ Hamler might. So he's kind of a discount version of that, potentially, that you want to keep an eye on. Our last two players. Let's talk about Harrison Bryant of the Cleveland Browns, tight end. FAU product. One of the best things that he does is work open when the play breaks down. He's a very good off-script route runner. And with Cleveland, with Baker Mayfield, even if their line gets better, he's a guy that likes to extend plays. And if he has a better line and he can have confidence in where he needs to go and move around, he can be really effective with that. He leans on it a little too much. He hasn't had the line to help him out all the time. He hasn't always made the best decisions. But Bryant's the type of guy that really does a good job of working open. And he could be a great resource for Baker Mayfield in that regard. In addition, with Kevin Stefanski using 2 and 3 tight end sets, I think Bryant's going to get on the field early. He'll be used as an H-back, a little bit of a lead blocker maybe early on, but he'll also be a guy that gets to run deeper routes because of his speed and quickness. And you can see where maybe Austin Hooper stays more in line. David Njoku is used, obviously, as a receiver as well, and maybe further downfield. But Bryant could be a guy in these 3 tight end sets to be able to filter outside and may even overtake Njoku at some point, because Njoku, unbelievable physical talent, you know, and he has flashes of being a Pro Bowl caliber like player on isolated plays, but he hasn't been consistent. He hasn't been assignment sound. He makes sloppy mistakes. And I think that's why you could see where maybe in a year or two he's let go, you know, whether the contract expires, they let him go, or they find it out, or they trade him, you know, early on. And Bryant ends up taking that role from him. And if that happens in 2 tight end sets, Bryant's going to be the bigger threat. Because while I like Austin Hooper up the seam, and he's good in the red zone in terms of being able to go up and win the ball, even though Matt Ryan didn't take advantage of that as much as he should, you know, Bryant is the more dynamic pass catcher, you know, in terms of catch radius and open field skill, whereas, you know, Hooper is underrated in that way. I don't know about Hayden Hurst over in Atlanta. That's going to be an interesting situation, and we're going to get to that in a minute. But Hooper is a guy that can make the first man miss repeatedly in the flats. He's not dynamically fast, but he's quick, has some power and balance to him, and he goes up and wins the ball. So this is going to be a nice duo in the future with Bryant and Hooper. And Hooper's a good blocker, probably a better blocker than Bryant. So you can see how these two would complement each other. Keep an eye on Harrison Bryant. I think he's the type of guy that is getting underrated. You can get him at a discount. You probably can stash him. He may be a guy that may even get dropped after year one because teams just kind of forget about him and think they'll look at Hooper's stats and they may think, well, Bryant's just never going to get his. But he's a guy that you probably will be able to get on the cheap either early now or maybe later in the year, and you can hold on to with low risk and see whether or not he gets a chance to earn that role that Njoku will eventually either, you know, be cut from or traded away. Our last guy that I think is intriguing in a notable landing spot isn't in Atlanta. It's not Hayden Hurst who got traded there, you know, after Hooper left. And people are really high on Hurst because he's quick, he's fast, he's a good athlete who can work up the seams and be able to work across the field and get yards after the catch. And he's an okay blocker. But I think that it's going to be interesting to see whether or not he actually has the skills that Atlanta needs as a blocker and as, you know, a receiver who can work, who can do both, you know, inline work, H-back work, pass protection, and catch and run in the open field. And if they get disappointed with that, well, they have, you know, they have Jaden Graham, who's more of an H-back and a move tight end, a wide receiver, like kind of a big wide receiver with good burst. He's going to have to improve his blocking. But don't be surprised if Jerod Pinkney, the free agent that Atlanta picked up out of Vanderbilt, winds up being the future starter in Atlanta. Because when you look at Pinkney, he's got the size to be an inline blocker. He's very fluid. He can work across the formation as both a lead blocker and a pass protector. And he's someone that can sneak out of the backfield. And he's very good against zone defenses to work up the seam, catch the ball against tight traffic or against hard contact and come down with it. He breaks the first tackle. He has build-up speed. And if you get him in open space, you know, he may not be a game breaker, but he's going to be a chunk play type of option, despite the fact that he lacks, you know, great speed and burst. He's just not a man-to-man guy. So, you know, in situations where you want him against man coverage, he's probably going to have linebackers that can cover him. He'll definitely have safeties who can cover him to an extent, but he'll be able to get open on some trust throws. But if you have him in zone and you have play action and you have him filter out of the backfield in ways where he served as a blocker and kind of sneak his way out or work open in zones on longer developing play action play, you know, throws, he's going to get open and he's going to be able to make good plays for you. This was a guy that many of us, me, I think Dane Brugler, Russ Landy, a number, had Jerod Pinkney as one of the top 3 to 4 tight ends in this class this time last year, or in August even. And then, you know, you start to look at him from a broader perspective and say, well, he can beat man. Can he do these things? And you have to apply all these different situations to him. You start to realize he's not a great man-to-man player. But, if you know, you have Julio Jones and you have Calvin Ridley and, you know, Todd Gurley out of the backfield still can catch the ball. And you kind of put all those guys into that equation. Maybe they're going to find some zone looks that where Pinkney can really thrive. So I would just keep an eye on him, kind of an under the radar player. And there's going to be tight ends in this class that are going to get underrated because everyone pretty much panned this class as not very good. And because the wide receiver class and the running back class was good, the quarterback class had some real strengths in it, that people are going to, you know, kind of write off the tight ends is not worth it at all. And I think there's like five or six guys who could wind up being decent contributors, if not starters, in this class. And Pinckney is probably at the end of that list, but he's one of them. So those are guys that I think you should keep an eye on. Down the line, hopefully we'll have Russ Landy come back, and we'll do some scout talk shows with him, have Mark Schofield on. And I'm going to start doing some RSP film rooms this summer, I believe. One of them coming up is going to be with old friend of the show, Chad Spann, former NFL and CFL running back out of NIU. And we are going to look at Jonathan Taylor. Chad Spann is from Indianapolis. He likes the idea of being able to have a chance to look at a local guy in terms of a local pro now and talk about him. So stay tuned for that. Once again, get your RSP post-draft, get the pre-draft with it. The newsletter will be coming, out. First one will be coming out in June. And I appreciate all the support that you guys have been given during this time. Hopefully everyone is staying healthy and being careful, even as we are approaching a period where there's some hope that maybe we can get outside a little bit or be able to do a little bit more. Be careful. It doesn't hurt to be, extra careful at this point, for the sake of your health and other people in your lives. So have a good week. I'll see you again soon.